for saving a water mess up here. Not sure how many of you were watching that, but thank you for that. I greet all of you in the name of Jesus here this morning. I hope, I was on the way to church this morning, and I was thinking about what if our moods are affected by the weather? And if your moods would be affected by the weather, you would be here this morning in a very bad mood. It's cold, the sun is not shining, and it's dreary. But if you have a living hope within you, the weather does not affect you in that way. Also, welcome to the visitors. I am not going to mention names because I'm afraid I will miss someone. But we have quite a few of you here, as Paul said. Good to have you here this morning. We are testing out a new mic here this morning. Are we all good, Jeffrey? Okay. If there's any issues, just let me know. Thank you, Joe, for the reminder on who our anchor is. Did you know that when Jesus referred to his church, he doesn't refer to it in metals? He does not talk about his church as gold or silver or bronze or iron. He doesn't refer to his church as that. He refers to his church as a rock and as a stone. That's the language that he uses. And towards the end of the message, we're actually going to look at that a little bit. So, Joe, I'm again amazed how God works. Thank you for laying the foundation for the message there. I'd like to begin by telling you a story. Once there was a king. This king was in his second year of reign. This king, one evening, went to bed as usual. He sat on the edge of his bed. He started to think about the magnificence of his country. He started to think about the accomplishments that he had done. He started to think about the fact that he was in charge of the most powerful nation on earth. He had the best scientists. He had the best math teachers. He had the best SpaceX program. They didn't go to space, but they understood the stars and space. He was the most advanced, he was in charge of the most advanced country in the world. And he had so much power over the average citizen. At any given time, if he had a disagreement, if anyone offended him, he had the power to have them killed immediately. And so he was sitting at the edge of his bed, and his heart began to swell with pride. He began to think of all the nations that they had conquered. He started to think about all the treasures, the silver, the gold, everything that his men, his best fighters, had brought in from other nations and the other nations that they had conquered. And he lay at the edge of his bed with a smile on his face. He blew out his lamp and he laid down, and with a smile on his face, he fell asleep. In what seemed like a very short time, he jolted awake. He saw something. What did he see? Unsure of what had just taken place. Was it a dream? Was it a vision? He just knew that something was not normal. He paced the floor, unable to sleep. And finally, he decided, I'll sleep over this. In the morning, hopefully I'll forget about it. He went back to his bed. He laid back on his pillow, and he stared at the ceiling, unable to sleep. A little bit like me when I have a cup of coffee too late. When he couldn't take it any longer, he said, I've got to do something. I've got to invite some people in here. So he called for his magicians. He called for the most educated scientists in the land. He called for the astrologers, those who forecasted future events and trends based on the celestial bodies' positions at the time of the question. Desperation was setting in, and he called for the sorcerers, those who could cast spells and curses on people, who could predict the future, and who communicated with the demons. Surely, these men could tell me what I just saw. Surely they'd have the power to interpret this dream. He called in the highly educated Chaldeans, the most intelligent men of his land. The Chaldeans, who were the bravest to speak first when they were brought in front of the king. These people were brought in to the king, and the Chaldeans were the ones who spoke in the Syrian language. And with knotted stomachs and beating hearts, they began. Your Majesty, can you do us a favor? Can you please tell us what you dreamt? If you can only tell us what you dreamt, we'll tell you the meaning of your dream. The king replied, I don't remember. All I know is that this dream is driving me crazy, and I want to know what I dreamt. His face became flushed with anger when he realized that his wisest of his men could not interpret his dream. And the king said, if you do not tell me what this dream means, I'm going to cut you into pieces. And your houses, your possessions, are going to become a pile of dung. Tell me what I dreamt. All you have to do is tell me, and I will make you wealthy. I will give you a reward, many rewards. I will give you money. I will give you possession. These men began to think about their wives and their families. Would they ever see them again? Did they see their wife for the last time this morning? Was this their end? Was this how they were going to go? They had nothing to lose. At this point, they tried one more time. They cleared their throats and tried to stay calm. The lump in their throat was so big, their hearts beating so fast, they could hardly speak. Your Majesty, tell us your dream, and we will interpret for you. Just please tell us what your dream was. They waited. The king began to speak. He was still angry. I know that you're only trying to buy more time because you know that I don't remember what I dreamt. You came to me prepared to say things that were untrue so that my anger could suffice enough that later I would probably forget my dream. Again, the Chaldeans spoke, visibly frustrated with the ridiculous demands of the king. There is no one on earth who has ever demanded this of their men, to know what your dream was. No one except for the gods who are not made of flesh. Only they are the ones who are going to be able to interpret this dream for you. No ordinary human can do this. He was furious. He flew into a rage. I want every person in this room and every wise man in this country to be executed tomorrow. Word quickly spread, and the king's decree was sent out. All men were to be hung, all the wise men were to be hung on the very next day. Turn your Bibles to Daniel chapter 2. Can anyone tell me the name of this king? Nebuchadnezzar. Thank you for that. Daniel 2, verse 13. All right, so I want us to imagine we're here. What would you do if that was you? And what would you do in a situation like this? Because this also applied to Daniel and his friends. Verse 13, and the decree went forth that the wise men should be slain. And they sought Daniel and his fellows to be slain. They called up Daniel and said, you're as good as a dead man, and your friends as well. And I don't think that, if we go on a little bit, I don't think at this point that Daniel actually understood what was going on. The only thing he knew was that they were fixing to be killed. So imagine what was going on in his heart at this time. So we have an irate, angry king. This king was just completely unreasonable, totally beyond logic and reason at this point. Someone shared a quote recently. It was something about that when we know we're losing an argument, we resort to emotional manipulation. And unfortunately, that is often what happens. What would you do in a time like this? I thought only to be fair, I should tell you why I'm going through the book of Daniel. I was asked to teach Bible school in Pennsylvania this winter. And so I'm taking you all along with me on that. So you are my guinea pigs here. And that is the reason. I'm not sure how many more I'll do out of Daniel as far as messages goes, possibly another one or two. But my assignment is to study the character of Daniel. And that's what we want to do today. We want to look at the character of Daniel. We want to see how Daniel responded. And we also want to look a little bit at the interpretation of this dream. So as we look at the book of Daniel, we want to take a microscope and we want to really look close. Remember, Daniel was a young man. We want to look at the responses that he had to difficult situations. And a message like this where we just take the full chapter, the chapter 2 of Daniel, it's very difficult to come up with a title. But I may go with navigating difficult situations. That may fit, Jeffrey. I'll leave that to your discretion. Just a moment. Okay. There we go. Okay, so we're going to go along here. I have a slide, and I do not have a lot of slides today. I wasn't quite sure if it's worth it for, I basically have two slides, but the two that I want to share, I really did want to share, and so I hope that it can be helpful. But we're going to talk about navigating difficult situations here today. And we're going to learn from Daniel. I did not come up with this. I came up with this only because I read this and I observed Daniel. I simply watched Daniel, and I hope that we can do that today as Daniel finds himself in this situation. Daniel 2, verse 14. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom. And this counsel here could be prudence or carefulness. And wisdom, another word we could use there is discretion. Another word for this wisdom here, I looked up this word, and it means to flavor. So I was thinking about that, to taste or to flavor. You ladies get a bowl of soup or whatever you're doing, and you try to figure out the flavor and the taste and see what it needs. You don't pour a cup of salt in your bowl of stew and then taste it and wonder what's wrong. First of all, you're probably going to put in maybe a teaspoon, and you're going to try that out, and you're going to see what the result is, and then you try it. And then you might need a little bit more, but you're probably not going to start with a cup. And I want us to think about that as we look at Daniel's response here. Daniel had discretion. He knew what to say at the right time and what not to say at the right time. He tested it. And we'll see how he did that. I want to look at discretion a little bit. It means to be discreet and to be able to discern what is responsible or socially appropriate. Wise conduct and management. So we have character management going on here. There are times when speaking our mind is woefully inappropriate. There are times when we may need to say what is on our mind depending on the situation. Sometimes we have this thing where you say, well, I just like to say how it is, and everybody's just got to deal with it. I don't believe that Daniel was that kind of a person. He responded with discretion. Proverbs 2:11. I'd like to read some verses, and you don't have to turn to these. I'll be going over them quickly. But Proverbs 2:11 says, "Discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee." And this preserve here, I looked this up, and it means you put a hedge around you, and it's a guard. Did you know that when you have discretion in your life, and you know when to speak and when not to speak, and you know when to do something and when not to do something, that is actually a guard for your heart. It is as a hedge of protection. Proverbs 3:21. "My son, let not them depart from thine eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion." Can someone tell me what is the beginning of wisdom? The fear of God. Thank you. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. So keep sound wisdom and the fear of God and discretion. So I have two verses here that I'm going to share with you. One is specifically for the ladies, and one I'm going to say is specifically for the men. It says the discretion of a man. It doesn't say the discretion of man. So I don't want to say that's concrete, but that's what we're going to go with this morning. And I'm going to have the ladies read the men's verse, and I'm going to have the men read the ladies' verse. Men, turn to Proverbs 11, verse 22, and I would like for us to read this together. This is a very colorful verse. All right, Proverbs 11:22. Do you have it? Let's begin reading. "As a jewel of gold in a swine's snout, so is a fair woman which is without discretion." What do you think about that, ladies? Quite the description there. You take an expensive piece of jewelry, and he compares it with putting like a gold ring in a swine's snout. "So it is for a fair woman without discretion." This thing of discretion is very, very important. Few things are as beautiful, and I think all the men would agree with me, that few things are as beautiful as a discreet woman. A woman who knows that some things are appropriate in one time and maybe appropriate over here. Someone who doesn't speak over men. Someone who doesn't always have to be in control. She knows how to read the room. Have you ever heard that term? And I would like, that's something for all of us here today. Know how to read the room. All right, ladies, Proverbs 19, verse 11. Proverbs 19, verse 11. Are you ready? The discretion. Thank you for that. I do believe that men generally have more of a problem with anger than women. And another way of this, I'm going to read this in the ESV. Good sense, and we could say common sense as well. Good sense makes one slow to anger. And it is his glory to overlook an offense. So being slow to anger is using discretion. I see this as someone who is not easily offended as well. One of the seven habits in Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, is to first seek to understand, then to be understood. And I'd like to quote something Stephen says in his book. The next time is in the context of leadership, but I do believe it applies. Anytime we are in a group of people, maybe a group discussion, a group meeting, whatever. The next time you're in a team meeting, ask yourself, what percentage of the words spoken in this meeting today came from my own mouth? If there were six people in the room and 80% of the words came from you, that is a problem. Again, read the room. Discretion, knowing when to speak and knowing when not to speak. The Greek word for wisdom here is teami, something like that. And that is the word I was referring to about meaning to properly flavor, to flavor as if you would be flavoring a dish. There's ways of saying things. You can say the same thing a couple of different ways. Talking of salt, my wife and I discovered early on that when she salts the popcorn, it's got plenty of salt. It's got plenty of flavor. Her family was used to, what I would say, over-salting the popcorn. That was in my opinion. We've got this figured out by now, by the way. I could have said, hey, this popcorn is awful. Why did you oversalt this again? That's a response. Another thing I could do is to be quiet and eat oversalted popcorn for the rest of my life. That would be another option. Another option would be to say, this popcorn has plenty of flavor. I would be fine with a little less next time. That would be one way of saying the same thing in a nice way, and I simply use that as an example. I believe Daniel was used to this, and I believe that the reason he had a relationship, it seems like, with Arioch, who he's dealing with here, who directly answered to the king, was because he had built up trust. And if you want to build up trust with people, you're going to be a person of discernment. Daniel 2:15, he answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree so hasty from the king? Then Arioch made the thing known to Daniel. All right, Lesson number two, start by asking questions instead of making bold statements. Again, if you find yourself in a situation, it may be a difficult situation. It may be a family problem. It may be a family financial issue. It may be a situation at church, wherever. But notice how he begins with a question. Great way to find your way into a situation is, again, the thing of waiting to feel understood and seeking to understand first and begin to ask questions. Even though, you know, there's times where we're so confident that we have the facts about this situation. Like, I know what has happened. I know what is going on. And so we just want to lay it out. Daniel asked a question, and when he asked the question, he got answers. He's trying to get all the facts. Again, the intensity of this situation. Daniel is about to die. I don't know that he knows at this point that he's going to get free from this. I see Daniel, he's calm. It appears in the beginning of verse 15 that the king didn't know why the king was so upset. And then we read where Arioch told him everything. I believe Daniel had a reputation. If Daniel would have been a hothead, if Daniel would have had a bad reputation, I'm not sure that this would have been going very well for him in this situation. All right, the next thing he does, he asks for time. Then verse 16, then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time. But God, I'm about to die. And he asked for time. I believe that is a lesson for us today. The Bible talks about being hasty. You can look up words in Proverbs about being hasty. Proverbs 29:20, seest thou a man that is hasty? And this is in his words, there is more hope of a fool than of him. How many times have you quickly made a decision and you regretted it? Or maybe there was a situation where there was this vehicle and it was such a good deal, you just had to go get it tonight. And you decided that instead of doing that, you're going to set 2 or 3 days aside and you're going to pray about it. And if you still feel good about buying this vehicle, then you're going to go buy the vehicle. And God works in amazing ways like that. Times when we think we know what's best and we really don't. I don't see Daniel in a panic. I believe he trusted his God in this situation. Verse 17, then Daniel went to his house. Lesson number 4. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Interesting, these are their Hebrew names. His companions. Talk to someone about your problem. I have had so many times I've had something big. And I talked with other people, and it was just like a weight off my back. We are not meant to carry heavy things alone. Extremely important to remember that. People who try to deal with heavy issues on their own will drive themselves crazy, and it will affect you mentally. Often when we're in situations, we are unable to clearly think. And I'll give you an example of that. Here a while back, my neighbor, he was getting ready. In his explanation, he was about to go to jail because he needed about $500 for child support. And so he wondered if I could help him. And just this one time, I won't ask you for anything again. I'm not sure how many times he's told me that. I won't ask you ever again. He needed $500. And I contacted Alex. And I told him my situation. And we discussed it back and forth. And just in a conversation, I was able to think clearly. And I find that, well, first of all, back to the story, I went back to this man and said, I'm sorry, I can't help you this time. I had helped him other times, and I just decided I can't be a continual bank for this man. And Alex helped me to understand, this time we're going to say no. And I have found that I can see a lot clearer when someone else is in that situation than when I am. Because we become emotionally involved and we're unable to see well because we get ourselves so involved. And we need other people for fresh perspective who can see the situation a lot better than us simply because they are not involved. Another lesson. Ask for intercessory prayer on behalf of your situation. He told his friends to pray for mercy. Very, very important. What was the result? He got his answer. Another lesson is to wait. Lots of verses about waiting. Daniel went to bed and he did not have the dream. Could have you slept that night? If you would have known the next day or the next day, I'm not exactly sure how soon, it was very soon, that you were to die. And he went to bed. I'm guessing he just had full confidence in his God. And I think that is just a lesson for us. Psalm 27:14, wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Waiting is extremely difficult to do because we want answers now. But understanding that God is in control helps us with that. There are times when it's very helpful. I found this helpful in my life to put time aside. Maybe you've been asking God and you just haven't really gotten any clear counsel. Say, God, I'm putting 3 months aside and we're just going to pray in these 3 months that we would we're seeking direction and we're seeking answers. God will answer. But wait, he probably won't tell you tomorrow and he may not tell you the next week, but he will show you. He will. Why would God get in a hurry if he is in control anyways? Daniel 2:19, then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. There it came. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Always remember to thank God and praise him when he answers. I would like all of you to stand at this time, and we're going to read 19 through 23 together. Daniel 2:19 through 23. Then was the secret revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. And he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise, and knowledge to them that know understanding. He revealeth the deep and secret things. He knoweth what is in the darkness, and the light dwelleth with him. I thank thee and praise thee, O thou God of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, and has made known unto me now what we desired of thee. For thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. You may be seated. All right, so he did all of this before he went to the king. My tendency would be to immediately run to the king and save my life. The first thing he did was spend time blessing and praising God. Daniel 2, verse 24. Therefore Daniel went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto him, destroy not the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show unto the king the interpretation. Think about how your path forward will affect others. Interesting how Daniel was concerned about these other wise men before his own life. So first thing he asked for was for the wise men of Babylon to not be destroyed. Daniel 2:27, Daniel answered the king and said, "No wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked." And I want us to read the first part of 28. I really want us to get this. "But there is a God in heaven." That should be our testimony as we go about our life as well. That we are also verbal in this witness, that there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. Acknowledge God and give him credit for what he's doing in our life. Daniel 2, verse 29, "As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came unto thy mind upon thy bed. What should come to pass hereafter? And he that revealeth secrets maketh known to me what shall come to pass. But as for me, the secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes. And that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that thou mightest know the thoughts of thy heart." I somehow just sense confidence coming from Daniel, because he knows that God has clearly spoken. And in the rest of the chapter, we don't have time to read this. But this dream, I want us to get a little bit of a visual of what he saw. Now, obviously, this is someone's imagination or possibly AI, I'm not sure. But he saw this statue with the head made of gold. Its middle and thighs of bronze, chest and arms were of silver. It had legs of iron. And this was simply a prophecy of what is to come. And in Daniel 2:39, now imagine the courage, knowing this kind of a king, the one who would execute people he disagreed with. In Daniel 2:39, Daniel had the courage to tell him this: "Another kingdom inferior to you shall rise after you." And we have the kingdoms here that he was talking about and what they represented. The Babylonian Empire lasted approximately 70 years. The Medo-Persian Empire, about 200 years. The Greek, about 130 years. And the Romans took over after that and reigned a long time. We're a very powerful nation. And back to what I was talking about, a stone. Daniel 2:45 has this to say: "Just as you saw that a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold." There was a stone that came. A stone was not made from man's hands, who crushed the iron, the bronze, and the gold, and the silver. It was a coming kingdom that was more powerful than any kingdom on this earth and was going to take the place and be more powerful than them in the end, conquer. And there's verses about that, about 1 Peter 2:4, "To whom coming as unto a living stone." Isaiah 8:14, "And he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling and for a rock of offense." This stone was going to completely destroy these other nations. And they're referred to as those metals. What can we learn today? I think the end of the passage, where we receive just the confidence of who God is and what he will do and how he is in control. And another lesson is just, you know, we just had a presidential election, and sometimes There's a lot of pressure to vote and things like that. And sometimes maybe you question yourself, why don't we get more involved? When you look at situations like this, you see that God is completely in control of the nations when they rise and when they fall. And they rise and they fall. Guaranteed. It just repeats itself over and over again. But there is a kingdom that does not fall. And we can put our confidence in God when we are in difficult situations for our trust. Let's kneel for prayer.